The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Motor City Metrics podcast here at TigersMLReport.com. I am Rogelio Castillo. Alongside me is Chris Brown and Youper. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And make sure you give us a five-star review or a review that you feel that is appropriate based off your listening pleasure or listening experience, if you will. And before we get to anything else, we wanted to mention our friends over at BetOnline, which is your number one source for all summer sports this season. From MLB, golf, NBA, to the NHL playoffs. Watched a little bit of hockey this weekend. Watched the Game 7 between Boston and Toronto. And watching the Rangers and Canes as well. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including team matchups, player props, and odds on just every sport out there. Head to the website today, BetOnline, or use a mobile device to get on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. So, good evening, everybody who's watching us on YouTube Live. Appreciate that. So, and again, as always, we appreciate if you always want to donate. We had a couple donations come in last week from the Minor League Report, so thank you. Good to see Brandon Day filled in for, it was just Brandon and I on the Minor League podcast on Monday night, so it is good to see Chris back on the men here, so.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you know, it was, I started a new job this week. And doing real work for the first time in 17 years was a little bit tough on the old constitution. I actually, it's just a hospital job where we actually are like I'm fetching various scopes used for patients in need of scoping, and so it's just kind of it's a little bit like grunt work at the moment, but you know, gotta do what you gotta do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's where we're at with the Tigers right now, who went 1-5 in a road trip. And I want to start the evening with a couple things, because I'm glad that we waited, because we've been trying to do two shows a week, do a show on Sunday after series is over. But I felt like we were saying the same thing we said Friday. The Tigers got, well, I mean, we'll break down the series. They got swept for the first time this season. And we'll get to that. And then they lost 2 out of 3 in Cleveland, including a game they could have won yesterday. And there were some questionable decisions made. And that has provoked a lot of weird reactions, a lot of takes and everything. And look, let me just say this. Let me just say this once. And I've said this before. You're entitled. You live in America. You're entitled to your opinion. Your opinion's fine. Whatever your opinion is, cool. I might not agree with it. That's fine. The Tigers, I agree with Kevin. The Tigers should have gone 4-2. Okay.
I mean, yeah. In a different world, you go back the full week and they win that game. The Flaherty, you know, masterpiece. They win that game. They win two of those games against the Yankees and another one against the. I mean, you know, small things could have made the difference in four of those games, five of those games. Like it's, but that's the thing, you know, when you're a good team, you those small things, you get them done. And when you're struggling, you don't get them done.
Absolutely. And whether it's the automatic decision of putting Andrew Chafin in the ninth because reasons, I mean, it is okay. It's, I mean, in terms of did AJ Hinch manage over a week a little bit? Yeah. Well, go ahead, Chris.
I'll say, you know, Chris McCoskey wrote an article about that, about why Hinch did all that. And I thought it made a lot of sense why Hinch was doing that. And he basically forced a vote to empty his bench with like in the course of like two batters. And it worked out fine, except for the fact that Chafin gave up a home run to, you know, a rando. Was it Jace Fry? Who was it?
David Fry.
A pitch that wasn't even that bad, really. It wasn't like he, a meatball or whatever. He threw it on his outside fastball, and the guy went with it and hit it to the shortest porch of the park. And honestly, I think, and the article also pointed out that, you know, when Hinch is doing that, when putting Foley in the seventh inning, he's not counting on the kind of single stolen base error issue in the eighth inning that made things a little bit dicier. But, I don't know. You know, it's people want managers to be flexible and you know, ride the hot hand or whatever. And Foley has been a little bit iffy, and he thought he saw a place for using him that where he could succeed and it would help the team. And then he'd have lefties available to pitch to a lefty heavy Cleveland lineup. And it just didn't work out.
Also, it's a team too that hits off speed pretty well. And Jason Foley's off speed run value is -2. So there's something to be said about that. And let me just say this. A couple things. One, Youper, go ahead. If you had anything else to say, go ahead. Cause I'm going to, it's going to be a good 2-3 minute clip here before.
It's one of those things that when you're a mid-level team and things start to go in the wrong direction, it's hard to get things right. And it's, you know, over the course of 162, you're going to have a 1-in-5 week on the road. Almost every team will. And it's one of those things where winning has 1,000 fathers and losing is an orphan, you know? And so now Hinch is an orphan for a little while. And that's okay. I think you guys described a lot of those situations correctly. I think he had reasons behind everything. I'm going to talk about Foley a little bit later. You know, trusting Alex Lang, he's done well, but that is a tenuous situation. And you know what this bullpen is going to do is going to be very interesting to me over the next few weeks. You know, one play that really was such bad luck it turned out was that stupid ball going off the knob of the bat. You know, they almost would have been better off if the pitch hits him. Then they got first and third, and you still got the double play in order, and the run hasn't scored. You possibly pitch out of that situation. But the stupid thing is the knob. He's jammed so bad, and that produces a run. So that was, you know, kind of emblematic of the week. There are certainly several other games. The Flaherty game, very tough one to stomach as well because they had that thing. They just could not tack on a run. And that has been the story quite a bit this year. Yesterday, prime example, they scored 4 runs in the fourth inning, and they put up donuts for the rest of the game. You know, this offense just does not tack on runs enough to make some of these games a little more bulletproof.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to give you guys a couple numbers here. We're not doing inside numbers yet. So as far as offense right now, after 39 games, so we're looking at right now, the Tigers have played 37 games right now and at the same point last year. So I'm going to go with last year's numbers. The Tigers scored 134 runs and hit 31 home runs and had a WRC plus of 80, which is terrible. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. This year, 37 games. We're at that point, batting .227. Not good. So the batting average is worse. WRC plus of 90. Slightly better. Run scored. You're curious to know. All right. For the lack of people talking about the runs being an offense, and the offense is a problem. I'm not disputing that. So let's be clear about that. It's 149 runs. And as a team, they have 32 home runs. So they have one more home run than they did at the same point last year. So that being said, stop complaining about the hitting coach. It's not the hitting coach's fault. It's not AJ Hinch's fault that Spencer Torkelson misses center cut fastballs. It is not his fault that they cannot, you know, the Tigers are a game over 500. At the same point last year, there were 2 games under 500. Okay. Javi Baez some of his errors, same mental errors that he's always made. It's terrible. He I'm not disputing that whatsoever. Okay. Excuse me. And then you look at some of the manager of like just in terms of OPS. Okay. The Tigers have been barely given a run support to Reese Olson. But when I see things like we whine about Harris, we whine about Baez, we complain about Torque and Keith and others. What about AJ Hinch? He gets a free pass when he's mismanaged multiple games in just this week alone. And how many hitting coaches do you still not, you still need not to hit? It doesn't work that way. You look, and this stems from what was on the Mike Valenti said earlier last week about this not being a baseball town. And you ever, like, you look, Chris Illich is not going to spend money. Everyone knows it. And if he is going to spend money, it just either you can't have it both ways. You want the prospects to play, but then you bitch and moan that Colt Keith's not doing anything. They did something by taking down Parker Meadows. You look at the free agent market. You're giving Scott Harris literally barely 2 years, and I'm not giving Scott Harris a free pass by any stretch of imagination. He also needs to be held accountable. That being said, though, give the man some effing time. It is, to me, it's mind-boggling to me. Some of the things I've seen, it's just like, what sports radio does is they're going to provoke you to get an opinion. They're going to get you fired up. They're going to get you pissed off because that's what they want. They want a reaction. They feed off the reaction. And they're going to, they're not going to look at, unfortunately, Stan has a really good stat. There's certain things like Cool Keefe leads the league in barrel percentage, or like he's higher than Mookie Betts. Does anybody care? No, because you know what? No one cares about that because he's not hitting when in clutch. He's not hitting when he needs to. And I'm not, again, I know everybody hates that. Everybody hates that voice. I know people do, but I don't care anymore. Whether you like the voice or not, I don't give a shit. I don't, because I'm quite frankly sick and tired of people dictating to me what they like and they don't. You want to give me an opinion on what I like, what you like about the show? Great. That's fine. I get it. Fine. But to get my point across, if you're going to make fun of me for seeing the voice, then I'm going to say, look, a lot of times what really drives me nuts is somebody's opinions out here. Like just saying, I saw somebody say baseball is a picnic game. What the hell are you talking about? I don't want to hear about baseball on the radio. Then turn it off. Then go listen to something else. What the hell? It's a picnic game. They've been playing for over 125 years, you dolt. It's a picnic game. If you want to have an opinion, fine. Back it up, opinion. Whatever you say. Look, everybody is held accountable for this. But good, like I have to step away from Twitter. I have to step away from social media because I can't. To somebody complaining on the Erie Seawolves Facebook page about an AI jersey, come to find out the person that was complaining about the AI jersey, well, you're not hiring a local artist, was a local artist who had his own t-shirt site. Talk about self-interest, you dolt. Of course you're going to get mad about that. The point I'm trying to make is this. Look, Scott Harris has to – nothing. No one talks about Scott Harris signing Andy Baez, right? I mean, am I missing that anybody give him props for that? No. That went four for four this week. Had a big game and has been a big different. Like he has been a plus free agent signing. Anybody say anything about that? Nah, no, no. They're just bitching about, bitching. Twitter is a hell. Yeah, Twitter sucks. Twitter blows. Okay, let's even take Twitter aside for a second. What Sports Rock Radio is doing is trying to provoke your pain and get you mad, and that's fine. And that's what they're supposed to do. But don't buy into it. But don't buy into it. It is a small sample size when it comes to Baez. But the point he was a plus player last year. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he have one of the higher WARs on the season team last year, Chris?
I don't know what his WAR was, but I know that it was something like from June 1st to the end of the year, he was I think their second or third best hitter overall, maybe even first.
He had a two WAR. He was an average player last year. He did exactly what he did better than his previous season of -1 the year before.
And that was with that. He had that 0-for-38. If he had like a 9-for-38 in that little stretch, his numbers really would look good. You know, he battled through a nasty slump.
Yeah, I mean, he's an example. I mean, he and Holton are the two, I think, good examples of their, you know, quality waiver claims, right? We've seen some others that pop in here and there, but not just, you know, quality claims, but also, to Yoop's point, like sticking with a guy when you believe in the underlying numbers, even if the results aren't there. And that's kind of what I think we're seeing with Colt Keith a little bit right now. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things. It's strange. And this has been discussed a lot, but for some reason, the gap between AAA and the majors has seemed, for hitters at least, is suddenly just ballooned to even more than ever. And you know, with Keith, he's not hitting, but he's also not, it's not like he's completely overwhelmed and overmatched. He's putting together good at bats for the most part. He's not swinging and missing a ton. It's just he's not getting hits. He's not making the quality of contact that he needs to. And you just hope that the process that he's going through right now will eventually yield results down the road. And the Tigers have been patient with guys like that. And we see people complaining, the same radio people who like to complain for complaining purposes to get people talking. The same ones like to complain about players who were here who then go elsewhere and do anything. It was Trace Thompson last year or 2 years ago. Remember, oh, the Tigers let this guy go, and look what he's doing. Now where is he? He's
selling insurance.
And now it's Tyler Nevin, right? Yeah. Well, they gave Nevin a ton of chances, and he didn't perform. And Baltimore took him back, and he didn't perform there. And now he's in Oakland, and he's doing some things. And like, you know what? A lot of people find themselves in Oakland because there's zero pressure. You know, whatever. But I don't know. I mean, radio is radio.
And Twitter is Twitter too. You know, it just
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of smart guys on Twitter and women comment about baseball, and you can still get a lot out of it. But certainly, there are the people who are part-time baseball fans and full-time NFL fans who want immediate gratification. If they don't get it, you know, they're going to spout off, and that's fine. You know, there's a dude from the UK. I don't know if you've seen him on Twitter, not Jed, but the other guy, kind of new to the sport, and he kind of encapsulates to the, you know, way out on the extreme some of the complainers that we see on Twitter. He's living and dying with every game, and as a baseball fan, that's going to kill you in the long term. He wants to stab himself in the eye when they blow one of these games. Not, you know, we got 140 to go.
A YouTube user said this is a fun episode so far. Fun fact about Andy: his average is higher than his OP. Is OBP according to Baseball Reference. I'm sorry that's not a fun episode so far. It'll get better, but I have to get this off my chest because, by the way, if you're curious about Thompson, he's playing Syracuse, AAA Syracuse for the Mets. So just there you go. I'm just wanting to get this off my chest. You're entitled to your opinion, and everybody is. Whatever your Meltzer butter, and as Chris said, is correct. They're the call. They're there to do those things. They're there to provoke reactions. Can Scott Harris be more clever with his free agent signings? Absolutely. Can he do all these things? Great. But I've never in my life seen a team that's over 500 with a plus run differential that is the worst team of all time based off what you see on social media. The Tigers could be the White Sox. The Tigers could be anything else in American League. And I feel like some days I feel like the Tigers are the 2003 version of the Tigers. And it is one of those things where I don't get it. Maybe I don't get it because, I mean, I try to be objective and Chris and I do a minor league breakdown. Youper does a Tiger podcast. And it's our call. It's our job. I like to think to be also entertaining, but also at the same time, objective and tell it how it is. The Tigers are not perfect. By no stretch of the imagination are they. But the one thing that I do not understand is this team has Nate Cornejo coming. The thing is, the farm system, I'm pretty sure we've never promised that these guys are going to be the next new wave of things. But Kirk Gibson struggled first couple seasons when he was in the Tigers uniform. The only one that broke that mold was Lou Whitaker. Lou Whitaker won Rookie of the Year. And I think, and you know what, Noah, you know, like Noah said it, but I think fans are just playing the frustrations out of the previous 10 years in ownership. That's perfectly fine, Noah. And Noah, follow me on Twitter. You don't follow me on Twitter. I know you don't.
But, all right. No, I think largely a lot of the complaints from the radio side and from us are similar. Like, this has been going on for way too long. They haven't put a competitive product on the field. Like, the difference is that the radio will tell you that it's your fault for being dumb fans who aren't good and you should, you know, boycott the games or whatever. And this is the ownership. And we're trying to like figure out why these things are going wrong and what they can do to make them better. Like, instead of blaming you, the viewer.
I'm not going to blame the fans.
Like, people have the right to, you know, get upset. And like, we've talked about it many times. Like, we sure would like to have a fun winning baseball team here because it would bring more eyes and we'd have more people to talk to and it would just be more fun. But that's not what we have right now. We have a team with really strong pitching for the most part and a couple of young, exciting offensive players and some disappointing players. And that's what they are. And it's, I don't know, you hope that they can get hot here again soon and maybe, you know, be buyers at the trade deadline instead of having to think of a way to get, you know, what kind of return can we get for Flaherty, you know?
Or for that matter, who we should trade for Luis Araiza. The Tigers, I mean, would that have been cool? I mean, but then that's where you get that hot take, like,
well, you know, let's talk and look at some of the Tiger prospects.
How do you know the Padres have any interest in the Tiger system? No one does. The only people that know that are the people that work for the system. The Tiger system itself, as one Pacaputa mentioned, is a little thin on hitting. We've talked about that. Exhausted. We've talked that at nauseam to the point of exhaustion. The Tigers are, and OBK said it best right here. Tigers are 24th in payroll and 24th in attendance. The Tiger fans are not coming because they expect more. They expect more. At the same time, even when there's little progress in this team, there's still, that's the part I don't understand. The Tigers are over 500 in early May for the first time in quite some time. And they're just like, nah, it's just not because of what's going on with the Lions. Meanwhile, the Lions, until recently, people even went after they were 0-16. Again, I know the difference between football games and all that stuff. I'm not going to go into that because that's just another rant and doesn't matter. But you can't, you know, it's so weird. You can't have, you can't have it both. You're right. Kevin said it best. You can't have it both ways. You want them to spend money. If they spent money and it all went to crap, then you're like, well, they need to build a farm system. Well, the farm system is not producing enough for you. Their rotation is almost 80% home built, and people forget that they had their first home built rotation of more than two guys in. I can't remember the last time they had more than, it was always Porcello and Verlander, correct?
Yeah, Smiley in there briefly.
Yeah, Smiley briefly. But you have Mize, you have Scooble, you have Reese Olson.
Yeah, I mean, and Olson was a trade, but they certainly made him better. You're right. Like, Fulmer, Boyd, Norris, those were all trades. Like, you have to go back a long, long time for that. You know, and Manning is still poking around. You know, he's been their fifth best starter this year. He's not their fifth starter. But, I don't know. There's been some signs, but I get it. Like, and there's nothing that says you can't spend money and have a good farm system. The Dodgers do it all the time, right? It's just a matter of, you know, we know the constraints put on the front office by the owner. At least we think we do. And maybe it's that. Maybe that's why the front office got hired, because they said, hey, we could figure out a way to win without all that money. And now they're being like, well, what were we going to do? But we see Cleveland doing it. We see Tampa doing it every year. Milwaukee does it every year. There are teams out there that are smart with their money and have good farm systems and know how to make things work. But you know, it didn't happen overnight. And I don't know. I don't really know. The book is still out on Scott Harris, honestly. I mean, we've seen a lot of the moves he made haven't worked out terribly well. Some of them have. We talked about Ibanez and Holton, but like, yeah, I mean, Matt Vierling's just kind of a guy. Nick Maton is gone. Donnie Sands is gone. Not that Gregory Soto's lighting the world on fire this year. I think his ERA is north of 6 at the moment. Justin Herron-Molloy hasn't come up yet. There's just a lot of these moves that are just kind of middling, and it's tough to know what the future holds. This year was really built on these young guys fulfilling their promise. And so far, you know, 1.5. Riley Green looks awesome for the most part. And Kerry Carpenter has had a bunch of good flashes, you know, with a little bit of a slump. And then nobody else. I mean, Wenzel Perez, I could throw him in there too, but that was not counted on by any means.
Hey, they have the doubles leader in the American League. Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah.
Torkelson.
No, they do. And here's the thing too, is like, it's just, I was a lot angrier. So I took a nap before the podcast, because I got up extremely early today, did my routine work and gym and all that stuff. And then I got up early and went, and I think the nap derailed my yelling, and I'm glad it did, because I think it would have been unrational and a little bit more unhinged, if you will. But I will say this, I hate beer league softball. When you cancel a game and then our coach goes up to the field and the field is bone dry, don't cancel a game 4 hours ahead of time. Wait a little while. Just do that. Do yourself a favor and wait a while. And also, I think, and lastly, the one thing that really got to me this week that I noticed on social media, and again, just taking a break from that all, just when the other Tiger related topic is the City Connect jerseys. We haven't had a chance to talk about that yet. The City Connect jerseys, either you like them or you hate them. I think there's more people that hate them. They thought they were boring, and they thought there was a lot of them. A lot of people did not care for them whatsoever. And that, I mean, for example, they were upset that the old English D wasn't on the hat. But keep in mind that the idea of the City Connect jerseys was to be the complete different take on what the normal jerseys are. The hats are a little rough. Admittedly, they could have done something more with it besides just put Detroit. The only thing I like about it is the Star Trek font, because I'm a I like sci-fi. That's it. I mean, but the Motor City itself, on with the tires and then the Woodward Detroit with the diamond and that was cool. The VIN number being the years that they were in the World Series and the year that they were put in the American League. Little stuff like that was cool. That was cool, and it was all right. But that means could they have done better? Absolutely. They could have done better. But again, I blame more of Old BK always gets me every time with this. Should have put a picture of the Gorn on the jersey. I just feel bad for those guys when it's 90 degrees in June and they wear that blue and black combination in June and July and August and the dog days of summer on a Friday. Oof.
Well, but, that's... Yeah. You remember we would go up to Lansing and they do the Page Fence Giants games.
Oh, yeah.
And the Lansing jerseys. Has to wear their black jerseys with purple numbers. And it's like, man, that's got to be incredibly warm.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to look at, I think if we did, you know what, I would love to do, we're not going to do this show today, but I would love to do, if listeners are listening or watching us on YouTube, or whatever you, how you listen to us, I would love to see your input on just like in terms of like your favorite jerseys out there, whether it's City Connect jerseys from another team or anything like that. The reason why I don't mind them that much is because it's the first time it's something different than what the Tigers have done. Their home jerseys have been always white, some form of white. I personally thought this jersey was here. They only wore this once.
One
but time. I guess, and I went back in time and I looked. A lot of fans were pissed about this jersey here on the screen, the 1995 blue alternate jerseys. Fans were pissed. It wasn't the home white, and they were upset, and it went away based off popularity. It lasted one game, and that was it. And now I see, I posted this on Twitter. Oh, that's a good jersey. And I think it's all because of based off, it's a generational thing, perhaps. I don't know. I wouldn't mind that jersey. This jersey right here, the old English D with the Tiger going right through it. The Rays City Connect jerseys are pretty sweet. There's some really good designs. I think the Tigers are, when it comes to the design game, they're a little behind on things because they don't really do much, to be honest with you. I think that most people are, I think Dylan Ninja Bees is correct. I think most people are indifferent. So if you want to know the City Connect price jersey for the jerseys, by the way, just as a heads up,
$1.54.
So, 154. Thank you, Uber. The Phillies one. I don't know if you guys saw the Phillies. Have you guys seen the Phillies one, by the way?
I thought I did, yeah.
New, that's a really radical different design mm-hmm. than what you're used to seeing. The Wrigleyville, like the ones that I like a lot are the Space City Astros ones. Those are pretty cool. Those ones are pretty cool. But either way, it's a different take. The only thing I don't understand is let me ask everybody a question in the room here. Who wears a short sleeve hoodie? Just out of curiosity. Who has a short shirt or sort? I'm trying again. Short sleeve hoodie.
I only know boxers who wear those.
Yeah.
Okay.
I see them for sale all the time on MLB.com and I don't get it. I've never bought one.
Yeah, I've never bought one either. Maybe I would wear one though. I do like wearing hoodies all the time. How much is it?
The price on that is
75.
It is $74.99. Yeah, so 75, yep.
I'll wear it. I like I wear hoodies all the time. So if I need a summer hoodie, that's my one.
A little weird. I don't understand it, but I do like the Blue Tiger. This is cool. This is a different. It's better than the gas station orange that we're seeing with spring training.
Yeah, Bill Belichick does. Yeah.
Odd. Oh man.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I've talked before, you know, Yoop and his son, you know, they're big jersey guys, and I assume you'll be getting one, or no?
Yeah, well, this was going to be my good, but I can talk about it a little bit now. Yeah,
let's go. I was going to say, if you want to go in the, go ahead, Yooper, go ahead.
Okay, we can wait till the segment. That's fine.
All right, I was going to say because I wanted to go in the inside of numbers first because there's quite a bit to get to with that with the Yankee series.
Cool.
So about by the way. I hope we, well, I'll talk about that here in a second. Let's go inside the numbers. All right, Yooper, what is your inside number this week?
My two inside numbers are 16 and 6. So, baseballs hit with an exit velocity of 110 miles per hour plus.
Mm.
Juan Soto, 16. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The Detroit Tigers as a team, 6.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. So I thought that was a pretty good illustration of where this offense is, where the power is. Another one way to look at it is Bobby Witt Jr., 13, over 110 miles per hour. The Tigers, Guardians, and Nationals combined 13 mm-hmm. at 110 miles an hour. So you can see where some sluggers are playing and where some sluggers are not, and whose sluggers are performing and which ones are not. And the Tigers are not scaring the upper reaches of the exit velocity as of yet.
All right. I like that. Chris, what is your inside number?
Mine is 1.2. And this is a little bit lengthy, but I've seen some articles over the past week, some talk about pitcher release angles. And the first one I saw.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted. Where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
This is one that you actually sent me, Rahelio, where it was an article over at Fangraphs by Michael Rosen, where he created he called it the Kirby Index, named after George Kirby, as he's considered the, you know, the best command pitcher in baseball right now. And it's fairly complex and lengthy, but definitely worth it if you're interested in that sort of thing. But the basic idea is that you can tell where a pitcher wants to throw the ball based on his release angle, which is not publicly available data, but you can kind of suss it out if you got the knowledge. And once you do that, you can then measure a pitcher's command because you can say, hey, this is where he wanted the ball to go and this is where the ball went. And so it's really kind of fascinating because the model he came up with is much, much more effective at predicting or like, you know, isolating command than any of the other existing models. And also at Fangraphs, they had an article by Alex Chamberlain where he was kind of building on that, the release angle thing. And what he was kind of digging into was something called, I think, intentionally obvious waste pitches, which is the idea that as soon as the ball is the release angle, based on the release angle, it's obvious to the hitter that that's not going to be a strike. But what he found was fun is he went and looked at the extremes, the guys who, like, every time it wasn't a strike or every time it was, and Justin Verlander led baseball by quite some margin in pitches that were intentionally obvious waste pitches that were actually strikes. So for whatever reason, his release angle make pitchers think it's going to be a ball, and it's not. And that's kind of fun. You know, another reason that Verlander has found a lot of success. But anyway, getting back to that 1.2, that number comes from our friend Dr. Bart Smith, you know, the guy who kind of discovered seam-shifted wake. And he was pointing on Twitter that the 1.2 is the difference in degrees of release angle between the inside of the plate and the outside of the plate. So wow. It's just a tiny, you know, fraction of a degree, and the ball is hitting the inside or the outside. And I just thought that was incredible and kind of fascinating how small that is. So that was, interesting stuff. I think you'll see more about release angles in the future because it's, I don't know, it seems like the next wave of something interesting with pitching.
That is seriously, that, especially because one of the things that you always notice is when the catcher has a target aimed, when they have the target set high and they miss. So it's like, I think it feeds into when they miss the target, when the catcher has it aimed a certain way and it doesn't go that way because they're so used to seeing that launch angle. And it plays into that too. But I'm just curious too. I'm one of the things that we saw this week that was part, I don't know if anybody's good, bad, and ugly, was Wilson Contreras getting hit by JD Martinez.
That was my ugly.
Well, that was your ugly. And the reason why they were talking about the data that allowed him that was going to frame up better for him to get better strikes. I don't know what data was St. Louis was looking at, but good Lord.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, not to jump ahead, but yeah, that was, it's, I mean, that's an ugly injury. And a lot of it, there's been an explosion in catcher's interference over the last, particularly this year, but over the last couple of years. And a lot of it is attributed to, they think catchers, you know, the batters aren't standing farther behind. I think the catchers are moving up a little bit to try to steal more low strikes. And I mean, we've seen the ultimate comeuppance there with it's not good to be able to see a guy's arm break in real time.
Nasty.
Yeah.
Very nasty. That's just, it's kind of a strange, the reason why I thought that was interesting, the way framing and that has to do with everything together. My number is 44, and that is the number of, so during the big winning streak by the Twins, the Twins played the White Sox a total of 7 times and went 7 against them. Okay. They scored 44 runs against them. One game I was there for in Minnesota. And, you know, people talk about the Twins' offense being back and, you know, the sausage and them doing little picture thing afterwards and everything. And it's good to see. We Youper talked about this before. The Twins were going to stick around. But again, I thought it was interesting to note all the 11 game winning streak, 7 of which were against the White Sox. So White Sox are atrocious. We don't have to talk about the weakest hitting teams in the league. The White Sox are right up there with that too. Which leads into my other number, the White Sox. And it was something to do with the home run super. I saw that stat earlier. But it was actually 194. Has a batting average of 1, Andrew Benintendi, the highest paid player for the White Sox. So Jose Abreu is down in AAA. Okay, so he's down. His batting average is, you know, he can contribute age, you contribute what have you. Andrew Benintendi is 29. So he's in his quote-unquote prime right now. And he's hitting, I mean, he's barely hitting any with any extra power. His OPS plus, by the way, is 45.
At least the White Sox brought back Mike Clevinger for some reason.
Yeah. I thought he was in League of Mexico somewhere or something like that, but like to that effect. To that effect. But anywho, yeah, I just want to let you know that it is cool the Twins have won 11 in a row. It's good to see. Gives the AL Central that nice profile that no one expected. But seven of the games were against Chicago. Mm-hmm. So there you go. So another comment coming in here from Deadly Ninja Beat. Anderson should sue Jose Ramirez for ruining his career.
Yeah, I think Tim Anderson did a lot of that work himself, though, too. Yeah. Yeah. Oddly enough, I just looked and the White Sox now have the same record as the Rockies. Ooh. Yeah. 90-28. Not great.
Yeah. The Rockies are even, it's even worse. I mean, the way you make it started on the Rockies. No, continue on. I want to get back to looking at the biggest, some takeaways from the Yankee series and the Cleveland series. The one thing was the Aaron Judge being ejected. I've never seen something so overblown in my life being like talked about. I know why, because obviously with the media market, everything, but the umpires aside, because the umpiring has been terrible. It's just been terrible, period. But
when was it good?
Yeah, you know, exactly. That's what I'm saying. When has it been good? No, I think somebody said it. They don't want robo umps. They just want good umpiring. That's what it is.
It's a hard job, but I think that's a good point. Like that's like, hey, we want, you know, go back to the good old days. Like when were those for everybody?
I mean, let's ask the 85. Let's ask the 1985 St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, where's Don Denkinger? No, I don't know. I think with the Aaron Judge, I mean, I don't know. Was that his first ever career ejection? I saw something about, he's the first Yankee captain to get ejected since, like, who the hell cares? Does any other team have a captain?
No.
Baseball? Well, isn't hockey.
Didn't Boston, wasn't Jason Veritek a captain when he was in Boston?
Yeah, I think he was. Maybe,
like, I don't know. All right, we don't need captains, all right? You got the skipper in the dugout. He's going to steer the ship.
I think from what I was able to glean, Judge, what he said to the umpire was he personalized it a little bit. Like basically, you suck today. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which is still, I think, kind of a quick trigger by the umpire. But the fact is, when you make it personal saying you suck, mm-hmm. you're going to go quite often. You got to say that call sucked. You can say that, but you can't say you suck or something like that. And, you know, he probably said it at a time where the ump was tired of hearing from Aaron Boone and had a quick trigger and off he goes.
Yeah. But, I didn't care.
Yeah. Also, I was getting kind of tired of Juan Soto and everybody complaining about every single call. It was like watching an NBA game over the weekend. I mean, it was...
I mean, if there's somebody who I give the benefit of a doubt, if they think it was a bad call, I'd probably go with Juan Soto. But yeah, he's not perfect either. He just still does strike out, and I think he was complaining about calls that were strikes. It's annoying. But that's been the Yankees forever. Going back to when they used to play the six-hour games against the Red Sox, and they were, both teams would be upset about every single pitch.
At the time, Brett Gardner was hammering the roof of the dugout with a bat, just acting like an ass. It's just kind of what they do.
Weird oversized head.
And everybody's like, well, look at Jose Ramirez not doing anything against the Tigers. And then he comes out and those things against the Tigers. It was a sleeping giant. So.
You think about that Yankee series, they were just one hit from winning Friday night. They were probably one hit from winning on Sunday. They just couldn't get that one thing that blew it open. And, the offense just has so many holes in it with guys not performing right now. They just can't come up with the one big hit that can blow a game open, or at least just give them a little bit of insurance, which is what they've been lacking so many nights.
By the way, if somebody's asking about Bo Brisky over Shelby Miller, he has, if you're looking at pure numbers in Toledo, Brisky has 10 walks and 19 innings pitched, and he's allowed 19 hits. So I guess I'm missing something with having Bo Brisky up. I mean, then again, this is also, I mean, they did the same thing with Reese Olson last year. His numbers weren't good, and then they called him up. If there's something in advanced numbers, Chris, and we're looking at some of his advanced numbers, Chris, there's something that really stands. I mean, we have access to it.
No, I think people are just remembering him from last year, and he hasn't been that good in AAA this year. It's you know, he's still got a good arm, and I would, it wouldn't shock me if at some point later in the season he gets it figured out and is pitching well and he comes up. But right now he's not a huge option, and you can't send Shelby Miller down anyway. I don't think he's without his consent. And
well, and you know, if you just go by numbers, who's pitching well is Englert.
Yeah,
yeah,
but
you know, do people think he's suddenly picked up major league stuff that he didn't show last year?
I mean, it's still the same stuff. It's still, he's fastballs tapping out at 94, and he's got a really good change up, and the curve and the slider are solid, but it's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's always tough when you're looking at numbers down in Toledo. Sometimes you just do. That's what they brought Ryan Vallade up, because he was hot. He was the guy hitting. And he had, he's right-handed bat, which they wanted, and he's got some positional flexibility, which of course they love. So that's why he came up. And maybe if Brisky goes on like a 10-inning scoreless stretch, he comes up. It's entirely possible. But relievers are crazy, you know, inconsistent. That's just the way it is. Poor Brendan White seems to have lost all semblance of control in the minors this year, basically since spring training. I have to believe it's still related to the injuries he was suffering, because he's I think he made his first outing in Erie the other day and walked four people. Oof. Got two outs. You know, it's tough to get consistency from relievers. You know, everybody wanted Joey Wentz gone. He's been great to the point where he's, you know, Hinch is using him in high leverage situations now. At least, you know, he did against Cleveland. So relievers are tough. You just kind of you lean on the stuff and the guys who throw strikes. And you know, that's not really Brisky right now, unfortunately.
Now, I will say this, and we talk about, you know, the series. I'm going to run back to jump ahead of the Cleveland series. When they went to extra innings yesterday, was anybody, I'm not a small ball proponent. I hate bunting. I'm not into it, but against Class A, I could have seen it, you know, and I wouldn't have minded if they'd gone that route, tried to small ball that inning into a run and just get Class A out of there and move on.
Yeah. I actually thought of that too, but it doesn't seem like, I think they'd rather take their third, you know, their three whacks at it, if you will. But yeah, I guess it's Class A is not, I mean, he's very good, but I don't know if he's like the huge strikeout guy. You know, it's still pretty, you know, dominant, but yeah, I don't know. I would have given it a shot, except the few times that Hinch has called for bunts this year, it seems like they never go well. I think it's like Vierling, I think a couple times was supposed to bunt and just nope.
Yeah, there's no question, and I've said this for years. People will think it's way too easy to move a guy to third base. It's really not. It's not really that easy. It's a hell of a thing to do. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I get it. The Tigers don't practice it, don't put it in play much during a real game. So maybe that would have been a panic move. I don't know, but it was something on my mind that they could have tried yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I will take away from the Cleveland series in terms of offensively speaking, that Ryan Vallade did do that, or he actually made a really nice play in right field too, is I don't think people talk about, to me at least, his defensive versatility. He's not bad at defender everywhere he goes. He's kind of like the utility guy where, I mean, he can play multiple positions. And the hitting data we had on him was favorable. I mean, in terms of hard hit percentage and some of those numbers that were, it's not on surface deep a little bit. So he also got some instructions from the organization on improving his, like they were talking about this beforehand. I think Jason Benetti was talking about this during the broadcast, or maybe it was, I think, Dan Dickerson. I can't remember. We're talking about that. So is he going to be the end all and the all? Who knows? But it was at least him to come up and hit that, come up, get his first major league hit, and then come through again. It was just a nice change of pace a little bit versus, oh, you know, Tigers bases loaded, do not score. I mean, they did that, what, two or three times against the Yankees?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it was fun to watch a slugfest for a change too, Tuesday. It was just a good time.
Yeah.
Just forget about everything else. It was just fun to watch.
Yeah. That was a good, a fun watch. So let's go into the good, the bad, the ugly this week. One day I'm going to replace that ugly with something Tiger, maybe a hobby bias swing. That's what I should have done in the first place. Instead of having Carlton from the Fresh Prince shooting the basketball and missing horribly, maybe having Javi Baez strike out horribly. That would have been the same. Chris, what is your good, the bad, the ugly this week?
Real quick, before I do that, I'm going to put up this question here from YouTube user. Are the Tigers good at scoring guys from third with one out? I just looked that up on Baseball Reference. A runner at third with less than two outs, they are the best team in baseball. 65.2% of those runners score. They've had 66 chances, and they've scored them 43 times. The next best is Boston at 58.9%. So they're number one by some margin there. So who would have thought?
Yeah,
not me. So, yeah, my good, and we kind of touched on this earlier, or some commenters did, but I'm gonna go with Reese Olson.
Nice.
You know, just the other day he made his 25th career start. He's pitched a couple times in relief, so he's had like 27, 28 games. But 25 starts seem like a nice round number to go into StatHead and see where he stacks up in Tigers history. You know, it's not quite a full season, but 25, good number. He is second all time in Tigers history for the most strikeouts through 25 career starts behind Tarek Skubal. Skubal had 139. Olson has 130. Number three is Michael Fulmer with 129. And then number four is Paul Foytak at 124.
Ooh. Who the hell is Paul Foytak?
Never heard of him. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like the 1950s?
Yeah, I think so. Olson is first in the fewest hits allowed through 25 career starts in Detroit Tigers history with 107, which is five fewer than Skubal and Mize. Both have 112. So what you're seeing here is we're in an era where people strike out a lot and don't get a lot of hits. But still, number one franchise history through 25 starts, not bad. His ERA is not particularly noteworthy in that regard. It's 18th among Tigers. You know, Fidrich is number one. But 3.78 ERA through 25 career starts is pretty damn good. that is like a solid number three starter in the big leagues. And that is, if that's what he becomes, and that's kind of how he's been pitching, that's incredibly valuable. So that's why he's the good, because he's been good. And that's a very nice development there. You just kind of hope that he stays healthy. My bad is Lazaro Armenteros. Lazarito.
Wow.
I don't know if people remember him.
I do.
And the bad here is just that he was outrighted by Oakland. He was a big name, was kind of going to be the next big thing from Cuba, really tooled up, sort of like the next Cespedes maybe. And this wasn't a surprise. He's been bad for like 4 or 5 years ago. We saw him plenty in Lansing. He spent parts of 4 years in high A with Oakland. But yeah, he just never hit. You know, the tools were there just for whatever reason. You know, it's tough to scout international players. But, you know, he's a career 249, 357, 425 hitter, which just doesn't sound awful. But he's got a career strikeout rate above 37% in the minors. And he's a Triple A for the first time this year. He's hitting 133 with 37 strikeouts and 72 plate appearances. Just couldn't make enough contact, and it's a bummer, but that's goes to show you, you know, we always wanted the Tigers to get in on these big international guys, and they don't always work out. In fact, a lot of times they don't. So
I kid you not, Chris, didn't feel like he was in Lansing the last 3 years. I mean, he was.
He was there all the time. Yeah, he was a regular, and then he wasn't quite so regular. And then, they moved him up eventually. But, Henry Davis was sent down to AAA.
Yeah, that's going to probably be my good, bad, the ugly.
He hasn't played very well either. And then my ugly was the Wilson Contreras injury and the pitchers or the catcher's interference stuff. I will also say that I think the day or two before that, the Cardinals had an actual Joe Boo doll in their dugout. And then that happens. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
You go look it up. You type up Joe Boo and it's like 3 days ago with the Cardinals. I'm like, huh. All right. Yeah. You go ahead and tempt fate.
Yeah. Don't drink Joe Boo's rum.
Exactly.
I'll tell you, I've showed you guys that voodoo thing that's in my garage, right?
That told me the story that was, you know, you didn't even.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
No, I will. Ladies and gentlemen, my father passed away real quick, and I'll get too sidetracked. There's a Jobu looking thing in my garage that's in my dad's. It's for my father. My father was in the Cuban Santeria. Things that I will not, like, I looked it up and what the thing is. I'm not going to say it because I don't want to wish upon it. I can't get rid of it because if I get rid of it a certain in an unholy way, I feel like my house will be cursed. I know it sounds strange, but it honestly, I'll have to show it to you after we're done, Youper. It's, yeah, you put candy around it, let it ferment, and then you do a little chant thing. And
so, it's like the Brady Bunch in Chicago or in Hawaii finding that tiki doll.
a lot less wholesome, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah.
But all right, where's your good and bad deal this week?
Well, my good, we touched on it earlier, is the jerseys, the City Connect jerseys. And as Chris noted, you know, my son, I have taken it upon myself to give him the world's greatest baseball jersey collection, right? So I try to be fairly particular. I've not gotten all the City Connect jerseys because not all of them have been very good. But the ones I really like, I've been trying to get. And I did order this one. I do like it. I like the fact that I like electric blue. I thought that was a good choice. I would have liked to see them go with a different color pants, either the electric blue or a white or even a silver to see what that would. I'd love to see a mock-up of it to see what it looks like. I don't like the hats, but luckily I'm not a hat guy, so I don't care. So I think that what people forget is the whole point behind the City Connect thing was to connect to the city that the team is in. Not so much about the team's prior old school logos or all that stuff. It was about doing things that, you know, mean something in that city. Like, a lot of people hated the Boston Red Sox City Connect jersey. Okay. And they are a little garish. They're garish. There's no question about it. But what those are, that those are the colors of the Boston Marathon. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was really something about Boston. And I, you know, they used the cherry blossoms for the Nationals in Washington. Made perfect sense. I love that jersey.
And they're getting rid of it too, by the way. That's the top selling thing, and they get rid of it. How ironic is that? But
yeah, I know, it's crazy. So I think this one is pretty good. I, for a long time, wanted them to go with Hitsville USA with Motown Records. I thought that was a natural. I am sure there are licensing issues all over the place that precluded that from ever being even possible. Motor City was always what I thought was going to be the most obvious, boring thing. I still kind of feel that way. But I give this jersey a good solid B-, and I'm a tough grader, so a B- is not a bad grade. I think it's a pretty decent jersey. I can't wait to put it on my son and take some pictures. It's going to be fun. So, you know, the whole thing about this whole deal is people take it so serious, and it's a jersey. It's what the teams are going to wear on Friday nights for a couple of years. Big deal. Have fun with it. You know, and buy a couple, and they're going to look good. My bad. Jason Foley. Zero strikeouts in his last five outings. Not good. A reliever's got to come in and miss some bats, you know, and part of the reasons I liked Foley last year, moving into the closer role, was the fact that he could throw a pitch in the strike zone and get outs and get some misses. And he started out this year, like on opening day, you know, I said it on Twitter that he just dropped a 100-mile-per-hour FU sinker on Moncada, you know, and whether it's fatigue, dead arm phase, he's got some kind of injury lurking, who knows, or maybe it's a mechanical flaw right now. We don't know, but something's going on. He's down in velocity at least 2 miles per hour, maybe a little more. So he's not coming out firing the gas that he was. And, you know, his whip is up to 1.53, and whip's not a perfect stat, but it's a stat that we all understand, and we know 1.53 ain't cutting it. So Lang is, you know, a 0.62 whip in his last 10 appearances. He's starting to get into one of those at least short-term relationships with the strike zone again, which is good. You know, last year he got into that phase where he was throwing non-competitive pitches. As Chris was saying, that angle was probably way off because there were some pitches that no one was going to swing at. When he's effective, even if the curveball comes out of the strike zone, they start in the strike zone and entice people. That's his whole deal about enticing people. He's doing it again. So he didn't get the job done in the extra innings, but I don't care so much about the Ghost Runner. What are you going to do? That's a tough deal. So it's good that Hinch has realized that he's not going to force feed Foley into that role. He's going to, you know, hopefully they brought him in the seventh inning. They're going to kind of nurse him along, and hopefully they try to get him back on track. Hopefully it's just a mechanical thing that Federer can work with, and they get Foley going again. Ugly, the Luis Arraez deal. You know, a year and a half, you know, he's going to be trying for his third batting title with the third team in 3 years, which would be kind of cool. I was very underwhelmed with what the Marlins got back in that deal. I mean, Dylan Head has some upside left, I would imagine. Those other guys are basically first baseman, right, with a little bit of power, but you know, in the prospect world, that's not exactly the best currency to get, you know. So I couldn't believe they couldn't get a little more for him when just a year and a half ago they traded Pablo Lopez to get Luis Arraez. So you know, why his price dropped and curtailed so much in the course of a year is a little surprising to me.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of somebody was talking about, because Monty Harrison was in the news lately. He was one of the four players that the Marlins got for Christian Yelich. They got Monty Harrison, Lewis Brinson, Jordan Yamamoto, or maybe I'm wrong with that. Isan Diaz. And Isan Diaz, I believe, was a, you know, Tigers legend briefly, but none of those guys worked out. And Monty Harrison is going back to play college football. And it feels a little bit like, you know, Dylan Head is probably the best prospect, but he's an A-ball, right?
And Yamamoto is a high school coach now.
Yeah, 80 WRC plus. Yeah, so it's, yeah, I agree with you. I just, you know, the Marlins, it seems like they had, you know, they were heading in the right direction. They get rid of Kimming, and then everything falls apart again. Yeah. It's like, what? Did you get rid of her because she didn't understand that the goal is to never win? I don't know, but
what is she doing? Does she have a?
I'm not sure where she is. I don't know if she's an AGM somewhere or not. Maybe she's, you know, has a year of like severance and just chilling.
Yeah, bide her time for the right gig. Yeah.
So my good this week is twofold. So in addition to Paul Skeens being called up, he'll make his MLB debut on Saturday. But the other one, too, is the one I mentioned, is that tomorrow will be the debut of Robert Gasser, who is the Brewers' top pitching prospects, too. The reason why this is good is because the hitters have gotten a lot of attention, rightfully so. I mean, the Brewers have Jackson Turtle is one of the best hitters under the age of 20. I mean, in terms of even, like, we've talked about Wyatt Langford and all the hitters, you know, home run, chicks dig long ball. There we go. In other words, what I'm trying to say. But speaking of the Padres, this is a guy who they got from in the 2022 deal for Josh Hader. The Brewers rotation has experienced some major injuries this year already. I mean, they've already been their shorter guy, DJ Paul, now with left knee sprain, Jacob Jonas. But Paul Skeens' numbers were child's play. I mean, I know why the Pirates did it, you know, like why they did it. It was just simply put, they were just putting him in there because of, you know, service rules and manipulation and stuff like that, which is fine. I mean, 45 strikeouts in 27 innings, and he allowed three earned runs. That's it. Just
it's a little reminiscent of when Strasburg was blowing through the minors.
Yeah. You have a K per nine. Ladies and gentlemen, a 14.8 at the international level. An international league is, it's like a hodgepodge of, but when you're putting up numbers like that in the internet, it's not, imagine if he was doing this in a Pacific Coast League. He'd be a, you know, GD legend, by the way.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't stun me. I mean, based on his stuff, it wouldn't stun me if this, you know, he comes up to the big leagues and does something pretty similar. They have the makings of a pretty, dynamic 1-2 rotation there with him and Jared Jones, who's been in a revelation. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah. So my bad this week is Bally Sports, and they're the news with them and the Comcast stuff. They're blaming the Diamond Sports Group's blaming Xfinity for the blackouts. So they in an open letter, they were saying that they weren't asking the Comcast for more money. But I beg to differ, because the in terms of history of what's been happening proves otherwise. Across the board, no matter where you go with this, I mean, remember YouTube TV last year, right? That was the same. It was like they dropped off YouTube TV. They've dropped off subscriptions everywhere. So enough is enough. I mean, you have to now go to, in terms of even like, for example, now you have to go on FUBU to get, you know, they're giving a 30% discount for people that are the Xfinity. FUBU.
I think FUBO.
FUBO, whatever. FUBU. Yeah,
FUBU is for us, by us, the old shirts and stuff, right?
Hey, boom.
Shaq used to wear that. And when FUBU was, steal your picnic basket.
But I agree with YouTube listener or YouTube user here. Both Xfinity and Bally suck. I don't blame the people who work for Bally. I blame the people who own him. Diamond Sports, the whole thing is just ridiculous. They know they can have you over the barrel, and they don't care. They don't care. FUBU, FOBU, whatever how you damn say it, it sucks. The whole thing's stupid. It's ridiculous. And I have the app, and luckily for me, I can watch it on my computer right here. Great. It's awesome for that. Cool. But I feel bad for people that are who watch cable TV. I mean, Noah from there was a writer from the Detroit News who he did a really good job on Twitter. Like he bought a cable box TV, and you see him going through the whole process again. I'm a cable cutter, but I mean, it's weirder and weirder to get watch baseball. The Major League Baseball. And this is we've beaten a dead horse to the ground in this, but this will probably be in the good. If we had an all-time good, bad, and ugly for since the last 6 years we've done this segment, baseball broadcasting would probably be in the all-time bad or ugly category for how many times we've mentioned them. Mm-hmm. It's just greed. Just say what it is. It's greed. You're greedy. You want more money. That's what you want to do. And to the point now where Sunday baseball, that Sunday idea that was on Peacock, is now going to be on something called, for those who don't know, it's going to be on something called maybe on Roku.
Roku, yeah.
There's a Roku channel. There's a Roku channel. It's you can get it.
Yeah, the Tigers didn't they get the Tigers Blue Jays game got flexed to the Roku Sunday brunch 11 a.m. game or something like that. Yeah. What?
Yeah. Who does 11:30 baseball besides the minor leagues? No, I don't get it. And then,
I guess that the Major League Baseball is like, hey, you want a game all to yourself? How about 11 a.m.?
Yeah.
Like, there's no other time where, so it's like,
unless you're in London, if you're watching the European or the game that's in London for football, there you go. That's the only time that you watch, or like if you're watching morning tennis or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Stephen King brings up Stephen King, it would be cool, but Stephen King, same name, same spelling, said, remember getting WIV Channel 4 on Antenna Windsor as a kid? Those were the days. You're right. I miss having a local TV option like UPN 50 or WKBD Channel 50 before it became UPN 50. Watching those games on Channel 50 or sometimes on Channel 20, or I think there were sometimes on Channel 20 or Channel 38, I can't remember. Channel 4. Those are what baited you to get. If you wanted to get that grid, then you go get Pass Sports or whatever. Somebody said last week, I dated myself because I remember Pass Sports. Okay. I guess, because I remember something from my youth, you idiot.
Well, I just remembered Paul Foytak in the 50s, so there you go. Yeah. Age myself.
Yeah, apparently you age yourself because you remembered somebody. Stupid saying. Anyway. But yeah, it kind of leads into my ugly is really bad and ugly is really combined. It's just, how are you making this game accessible for people. How are you going to make that better? And it's the, it's just like there, it, there's just a fine line with it. Because the only way I wanted to mention it was ugly this week, and Chris mentioned it earlier, was that Contreras' injury, because that was the most brutal thing I've seen in a long time. I mean, the howling pain. He was in howling pain. Like, just...
Yeah.
That was, it was one of those brutal things I've seen in a long time.
If it continues to get bad, they're going to have to put in a catcher's box, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, and the catcher's going to have to set up in there. And that's all that's going to be to it, you know. But because I don't know what they can do with the batters. I mean, they're not going to move the batter's box. I mean, they could probably paint the line in better so it stays and they can't get rid of it and cheat on it a little bit, you know, to back up. Because I'm sure the hitters are definitely trying to go as far back as they can to deal with the increased velocity. There's no doubt, because they get rid of that white line as quickly as they can so they can cheat as much as they can on that one, which is fine. But that's going to put the catcher in precarious position if they're actually moving up as well.
And the reason why, and somebody brought it up too, the bada bing brought up the Mud Hens more available to watch on cable. They don't want you to watch the minors. If they did, it'd make it easier to watch too. And they don't. And for whatever reason, even, I don't know. Again, Stan mentioned it earlier. It's, they're under pressure to be profitable, to take, you know, I get it, but also at the same time, you're hurting fans.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And all the weird copyright rules and stuff too, where it's, you're just making it, you don't see influencers at baseball games going, doing that thing. I mean, you know, here's a sign of the times too. ESPN is going to air League One volleyball next year. So this is, I mean, the Texas-Nebraska NCAA Finals, women's volleyball, averaged 1.7 million viewers on ABC last year. In some cases, drawn baseball. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But baseball, how is baseball not adapting quicker? It's beyond me. It doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. You can jailbreak Roku streaming games. There's ways to do it. There's Reddit channels. Chris may know people that quote unquote know about these Reddit streaming channels.
You may know the guy who knows the guy.
He knows the guy who knows the guy.
Guy in a white van.
Yeah. See, like it, like, oh no, like this was Noah here. Like this right here. I had to connect my phone to my TV through Bluetooth to watch Chase Dollinger pitch in minor league game of the day. You know what? I've had to jerry rig some things too. I've had to do some, like the way we do our clips sometimes when we're on the road, it is not pretty. It is not like we have had the jury, like it's like it's MacGyvering. We're MacGyvering things sometimes. I mean,
you're dating yourself.
I'm dating myself. Yes,
you've got a MacGruber things.
No. Actually, there's a Newman MacGyver.
I was just kidding. Yeah. Out
there. MacGrubering things. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, you're right.
So our listener here, Stephen King, now maybe he doesn't like the author, but I think the guy needs a nickname. I'm thinking either Cujo or Shank for Shawshank.
Shank, yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, what am I thinking? The Shay Langoliers. Thinner. Stand. Well,
yeah.
So what you think, Stephen? Stephen, come up with one.
Yeah, he's probably dealt with it. I know that all too well, you know, being a Chris Brown.
Yeah.
All anybody can ever say, it's the weirdest thing, because all anybody ever jokes about is like, hey, you beat up Rihanna lately. I'm like, that's really not like a fun thing to joke about. It doesn't seem like it should be a joke at all. But people always say it. So yeah. Red Plymouth. There you go. Christine.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
But probably not Christine.
Fury. Well, yeah, I was gonna say Fury. I believe was it.
Was it
Fury?
Card number 666 on the line.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. All right. But getting back to Bob, I want to get back to Bada Boom Bada Bing's question on, and this was a very good question, on are we starting to see a shift in how fast rookies make it to the big leagues now after getting drafted? Because I think there is, because based off how much the money that's being thrown at them too, and the development process a little bit. What do you guys think?
You know, I'd be interested to see a study. It does feel like that at least the first rounders are getting up quicker, but also, yeah, like And the Braves were really pushing guys there for a while. The Angels have been pushing guys like crazy. The White Sox tend to do that too. But honestly, if you go back like 40 years, I guess, that was fairly common practice throughout baseball. Like, you know, Alan Trammell didn't play that long in the minors before they bumped him up, I don't think, or at least, you know, it was, he was relatively young, I think. Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit. Shrinking of the number of minor league teams has had an effect in some regard in that way. And they're just asking these guys, these recent draft picks, to be readier, if that makes sense. But we talked about, like, I think I mentioned this, that you go back to that draft, was it 3 years ago now, 2 years ago? Jackson Holliday was the number one pick. You know, a lot of people had Drew Jones as the number one prospect in that draft, and he's still in low A because he's not performing. Yeah, so... yeah, I think a part of it depends on the player. And also, you know, this most recent draft class was amazing. And so you're getting two of the top four players are up in the big leagues already because it was that kind of draft class. These guys were incredibly good. Now Langford, you know, has had his struggles, and maybe Skeens will struggle too. I doubt it. I mean, you know, big league hitters are good, but stuff is stuff. So I don't know. I feel like it is a slightly more, you know, these days with guys getting pushed, but I don't know if it's a huge trend, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think it's become more apparent because based off some of the names I've made it up, like Acuna, there's a couple of them. So, yeah, there's a couple things where it's, I think because they've done so well, that makes it stand out a little bit. But for the most part, I'd be interested in seeing too is the, I was just thinking about this from a young hitter standpoint too, of the amount of people, like for example, what's going on with Jackson Holliday. Why did Baltimore do that in the first place is beyond me. They brought him up, made it sound like he was going to be there the rest of the season and then just like, so I don't know. Even with the way, like, pitcher, like, I'm not going into pitchers too much, but just with hitters, I think it was Joey Ortiz, Joey Ortiz right now is on the bench. And
well, isn't he in Milwaukee?
Yeah, he's Milwaukee. No, yeah. I'm just saying, but, like, he was a guy who they brought in, was the guy who came over from the Orioles. Mm-hmm. The reason why I mentioned him is because he was expected to be, I mean, after all that time in the minors, but. I don't know. It's not, I still love Joey Ortiz. I don't care. But anyway, it's. I think we're seeing it more because of the stars that have come out of it relatively quickly. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When they hit, you know, they always say the good ones come very quickly. And you know, I thought Jackson Holliday was gonna do it, and he came up and got dominated. It was weird that they sent him down very quickly. It was like, why did you? Yeah. It's like, I know he was struggling and it was tough on him, but it was like, what? All right. Well, what did that accomplish for anything? But I guess don't know.
I would like to see the quality of his at bats. I didn't really get to see many, maybe like three, seriously, of his 37 at bats. That's one thing about Cole Keith, for instance. As much as the struggle has been there, almost every at bat, not everyone, but a lot of at bats, I always once to myself think, oh, that was a good take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no, he really had a strong take on that one, and that's a weird thing to get excited about sometimes, I know, but I think it means something for the long term and why they're sticking with him.
Well, was he responsible for the only RBI in that one Yankees game, right, when it was a base loaded walk?
Yeah,
and it was a really good at bat.
He did, oh yeah, you know, like 10 11 pitches.
Yeah, and yeah, so there's a lot of
yesterday, right?
I think so. Two run single.
Yeah, two run single. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. We're big believers in Cole Keith, and I feel like he's going to figure it out it relatively soon. I don't know. I'm hoping, just because that it would be huge for the Tigers offense to – that's a guy, like, we believed in him like we believed in Riley Green, and Riley Green has figured it out, seemingly. I don't know. You just got to – he's got to figure out himself at the big league level, because it's going back to AAA, probably not going to help that much. Now, maybe it helped somebody like Parker Meadows because he was just – not on time for any fastball. I actually went, I don't know if I sent this to anybody, but I was looking that last Cleveland game. I'm like, I think this is the pitch that got him sent down to Toledo, and it's a Tristan McKenzie. It's literally like a 91.8 mile an hour fastball right down the middle of the plate, and Meadows hit a lazy fly ball to left field. It's like, all right, if you can't turn on that pitch, then we got to get your timing right somewhere else.
Yeah, no, and especially because McKenzie lives on the top of the zone all the time. That's his MO. And if you can't get anything, especially elevated against him like that, that seems to be a problem too. Because I think he's faced McKenzie before too, when he was in Akron.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, there's some history against each other. So, but on that note, so the Tigers are taking on the Houston Astros this weekend. The Stros are in the middle of a strange season where they are dead last in the American League West behind L.A., Oakland, who was 18-21. And so it's not going well for the Astros. There's been talk about them, like, just of course the Rampants. Well, they should start getting rid of these players. You know, Justin Verlander should come back home, all that stuff. But over the week, they were able to, it's a team that it's got a lot of talent on it. Their farm system, though, is not as good as it once was. But as far as going to New York this week, they lost 2 out of 3. They got blown out 10-3, and then I don't know how it went today.
They won today, 4-3.
Okay. But there's a chance to take advantage of a team that's kind of down, and then you got the Marlins coming up. And so the Marlins are terrible. The Marlins are back to, I remember this again for people who've listened to the show for a very long time. The Marlins were a punching bag on the show for a very long time. They're the only team in the AL, in the NL East, rather, that is not at 500 coming into play today. They are 10-29. They are the, you have a crappy name for your field, Lone Depot Park. You're last in attendance. You've totally abandoned the Cubans down there in terms of baseball. Cubans love baseball, but they don't like the Marlins. Ask any Cuban down there. I mean, seriously, for a country that we love baseball, be asking a Marlins fan that's Cuban, like, fuck that. Screw that. No, I ain't doing that. No, you don't have to say no. ¿Por qué? Porque that's those Marlins, una mierda. That's what they say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so as Stan mentioned, 15 on the next 18 games are against teams under 500. Simple as that. The Tigers have a good chance here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Houston still has a very good offense. And you got to hope, like, Yordan Alvarez hasn't gone completely nuclear yet. So you got to hope you can keep that from happening, but they still have Kyle Tucker, who's awesome. And they still have Altuve, who's playing well. And Bregman hasn't done much of anything either. So that it's a tough offense. You like the Tigers' chances with their pitching, but, I don't know. It would be interesting to see a series of high scoring games for once.
Yeah, Alex Bregman not going to hit 198 all year, right? I think most, unless he's hurt, but if he's healthy, he's not going to keep hitting 198. He's going to come back. Yordan Alvarez, that's what I was looking at today. If he was Craig Monroe, he's having a good year, but he's not having a Yordan Alvarez year, right? He's got decent little numbers across the board. He's one of the best hitters in the world. You got to believe something's going to turn around for him here. Hopefully it just starts on Monday.
I'm going to be down there on Sunday covering the game.
I will be there tomorrow and Sunday. Cool. Saturday, I will be at Royal Oak for the Red Wing alumni game versus the Royal Oak Firefighters. I'm actually doing hockey play-by-play for the first time in 4 years. I haven't done play-by-play in 4 years. My buddy Dan Griffin and I are calling the alumni game. We're doing it for completely free, and it's gonna be a lot of fun. So it's a nice change of pace. I'll be there tomorrow and I'll be there Sunday. So if you come by the ballpark, come say hello. And I think I'll probably actually be there Monday for the Marlins game, because there's some stuff we've been writing over at Tigers ML Report. By the way. TigersMLReport.com is becoming more Tigers based for reasons that, if you want to ask me about, sure, I'll tell you. But in all reality, we have Parker Meadows, who's graduated from our top 30. So we have a replacement for that. We have Cole Keefe, who's about to descend. So next week, we're going to be cranking those things out. We're also going to be looking at the draft, too. The draft is just around the corner, ladies and gentlemen. Not too far away. The draft show extravaganza will be going on this year. I'll be honest, though, I haven't really booked any guests yet. Usually I do, but right now it's, I don't know. Ever since the whole thing with John and everything, it's just been, honestly, it's sometimes the show is, I love doing the podcast. I do. I love doing the minor league stuff like that, but it's been harder. I'll admit it, because it's just been a lot of personal stuff going on. But with John gone too, it sucks sometimes because John did such a great part with the draft show last year. And it was such a great part.
Pre-draft show, right? Yeah, that was good stuff. Did you talk to Doug? This is a post show meeting, I think.
Post show meeting. No, not yet. I have not had a chance to talk to Doug. I've been giving him some time. That's John's father. But I haven't had a chance to talk to him. I feel, hey Doug, how you doing? I know how you're doing right now. So,
makes sense.
Yeah. But at any rate, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back either Sunday if the Tigers have a sweep. We'll do a show Sunday. If not, Monday. For the week seven in the minor league recap, as Chase Young continues to have a really good week. I want to eventually, so the Whitecaps are away for the next 2 weeks, and maybe I'm trying to see if I can schedule a Mudhens game. I am, I did talk to Clay Snowden, who lives down in Louisville, and he was talking about we should go down to the only time the Mudhens play in Louisville this week or in. It's coming up on May 20th. They play that whole week there. So I'm actually thinking about going there the weekend. So someone was going to talk to you off the show meeting, Chris. So, but anyway, gentlemen, thanks for the show or thanks for watching everybody on the YouTube channel. Thanks for everybody who listens. I really appreciate it. And thank you for walking me off the ledge a little bit there. I just didn't want to, again, sometimes when listening to you need a break from social media. Just do yourself a favor. Walk away. If you see something stupid online, just walk away and go do something like I did. I watched it. You know what? I watched The Holdover today with Paul Giamatti. Great movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really good. Tearjerker a little bit, too, honestly. That was well done. Well done. So we'll talk to you next week, everybody. Have a good week. See you.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me, a world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.